Why don't we begin? Meet Chimp 9.
We gave him
a gene therapy that allows the brain to create its own cells in order to repair itself. We call it the cure to Alzheimer's.
Hello, welcome to the Extra Credits Plus of Caesar's Trilogy. I'm Trey.
And I'm Kelsey.
Today we are covering the first of Caesar's Trilogy with Rise of the Planet of the Apes. We were just going to cover the final two Reeves films, but we revisited this movie before our Kingdom deep dive recently and thought, let's just talk about Rise.
Yeah, why not?
Because there are really important aspects, obviously, of this movie that pop up again in the Reeves sequels, thematically and emotionally. And also there are important aspects of this movie and rewatching last night that have a lot to do with Kingdom of the Apes that I want to re-explore today. And also Rise is just a pretty fun, underrated at this point, and exciting foundational movie to one of the most important trilogies of the past 25 years. It's a really good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely like very set PC and probably the most camp out of the three Caesar movies. And I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess they're all kind of camp.
It yeah, is, yeah.
You know, apes on horseback with guns. But I do think this movie is a lot of fun, like you said, and underrated in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Are there some silly things about it, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, do I believe James Franco is a scientist? No, but I really love it, and I think it is so important to make sure that the audience is emotionally invested in the Caesar character that we're going to follow. And it's really important also for us to understand his philosophy moving forward and Koba's philosophy moving forward into the next movie. So this movie, even though kind of unserious, but a good time, is also really important to the serious aspects and the emotional aspects like you're talking about in those future films.
Yeah, I mean, there's such a violent tone and somber atmosphere in Dawn and War of the Planet of the Apes that revisiting Rise, I always forget just like how absurd parts of this movie are. Sometimes unintentionally, but it makes it kind of fun. Like you use the word camp and it is a little bit like out there in moments and everybody feels a little bit animated. Like we're in a superhero film at times.
Yeah, it does remind me of early Marvel movies when they're in New York City, you know, when we're in San Francisco at the end of this movie.
For sure. We're seeing gorillas take like parts of the street off and throw it at cop cars and all that stuff. It's an interesting movie. It's a good time to me. I mean, it's a very entertaining opener, a great introduction to Caesar and our relationship to that character in the first act. The second act falls off a little bit because there's too many human scenes, which I think is something that we're going to say a lot in these Caesar trilogy episodes. And then the movie for me really takes off in the final act and has some of the most underrated set pieces in the trilogy. I actually think the last 30 to 40 minutes are some of the best moments in the trilogy. We have a jailbreakout that's like a rebellion.
Yeah.
We have the apes assembling like they're the apes Avengers. We have the Golden Gate Bridge battle, which is really sick. And seeing on the special features how they created that in the digital landscape was really impressive and kind of wild. It makes you watch the movie again with a different lens. So it is even though it has its ups and downs, ultimately it's just an exciting movie. And like what you said, our relationship to Caesar starts here too.
Mm-hmm.
And also our relationship to how the planet became the Planet of the Apes starts here.
Yeah.
Because obviously the 1968 film alludes to a nuclear holocaust. And this movie talks more about it being this like widespread virus pandemic that takes out billions of humans on the planet. Spoiler alert. And so I think it's a fascinating movie to return to through those different lenses of like, okay, what is the beginnings of Caesar's journey? What is the beginnings of this trilogy tonally? And then also, what was the sci-fi conceit that led to the Planet of the Apes? Like, that's all really cool because you just forget. Because we've rewatched this a couple times in the past month, and I don't think we've seen the movie in like 5 or 6 years because we just love the sequels a lot more.
Yeah.
But this is, like I said, it is kind of underrated. They're doing a lot in this film.
Yeah, and I think before we went to see, or maybe it was after we went to see Kingdom. I don't know. I think we watched it both times, right? Like we watched this before and after Kingdom. And you were like, wait, this like all started, right? Because James Franco wanted to cure Alzheimer's. And like the internet like quickly caught on to that too. Like I love that everyone kind of was like, wait, what? Wait a second.
I was kind of sad when the internet caught on a couple days ago because I've been waiting to say that on
You're
this
like,
episode.
Damn,
and I was like, shit.
We could have gone viral.
Yeah, they got ahead of it. And also, like, I hope we can talk a little bit about Andy Serkis today. Yeah. As, like, one of the most important actors in motion capture performances across Hollywood for the past 20 years, Andy Serkis as Caesar is obviously iconic. And I was thinking about, like, when, like, what are blockbusters going to turn into? And they're probably going to turn into these kind of, like, digital landscape, future spectacle-based movies where they almost all are trying to do motion capture in one way or another that look or sound like Avatar or look or sound like Rise of the Planet of the Apes. And so I was thinking, wow, like Andy Serkis might be, and this sounds maybe a little bit out there, but like a Charlie Chaplin, like Buster Keaton, Clara Bow, like silent actor, like the beginning of a new style of cinema, that being one of the first. But like this guy who might be remembered as one of the first great motion capture artists. And I was just thinking, wow, how cool that is, you know, being a part of movie history, just as an audience, watching somebody be, you know, go from Schmeagol and Gollum to a variety of other characters. And now we have him as arguably the most iconic character he's ever played, which is Caesar.
Yeah. I mean, I think that a lot of people, when they think motion capture, think about the Avatar films because of the marketing team. They did a great job of being like, look at this brand new technology and the dots on like the actors' faces and kind of releasing that footage to show audiences the behind the scenes. I think they did a really good job with that kind of movie campaign. But I do also think when people think of this type of acting, even if, you know, people who aren't huge film people who even like know the term motion capture or whatever, right? Like think of Andy Serkis because of Schmeagol and because of his roles here. So I think you're right. Like he is definitely an iconic figure in this space. So that is really cool, I think, to see this, especially seeing in Kingdom, right, of the Planet of the Apes that just came out, how much this technology has grown, how it grows throughout the Caesar trilogy.
Yeah.
And also we'll talk a lot about the behind the scenes on each one of these Caesar trilogies, just because it's so impressive what the actors actually do to emote this, like these really intense feelings through these characters. And we'll definitely be talking about other characters besides Andy Serkis today that deserve more credit.
Yeah, and I guess I should shout out, like, speaking of Avatar, like, Zoe Saldana in Avatar is excellent. Mm-hmm. I was also thinking about Josh Brolin as Thanos. There's so many good mocap performances of the past decade or so, or 20 years now, and maybe eventually in this series of one of these, you know, Caesar movies, we can talk about the best mocap performances of all time. I think that'd be kind of cool, because it is a short list in terms of, like, the leading actors who've done mocap.
Yeah.
But it's a fun list, like Thanos versus Caesar, like that's a fun conversation.
Yeah, the best mocap actors. That's cool. Now that we were talking about Dune, you know, so recently on the Patreon, and also we didn't do No Country for Old Men, but we like watched that recently for which? Oh, for Sicario, right?
Because
he's in Sicario. And now I just, every time you mention, you know, Josh Brolin, like as Thanos even, I was like, that's Llewellyn to me.
I always think, wow, he's the perfect actor to play an ape in a Planet of the Apes movie. Like he has that vibe and energy, and he talks about himself like on the Planet of the Apes, or sorry, the Dune special features, he talks about himself as like a gorilla, like on set, like that was the energy he brought to the set with Chalamet. And I was like, wow, he really would bring that kind of like gorilla energy to some of these movies. It'd be cool to see him in these roles.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just, again, like it's a different type of acting where you have to be so expressive with your face. And Josh Brolin definitely has that. I mean, it makes sense why he was cast for Thanos to do something like that.
John Bernthal has that too.
Yeah, I think he definitely could like fit in this world.
So yeah, I'm pumped to discuss this trilogy. Maybe this is a hot take, but I think this has to be one of the greatest trilogies of all time, right? Maybe that's another discussion we can have next episode with Don.
Yeah.
I'll come more prepared then, but like maybe the Planet of the Apes trilogy with Caesar is not as great to the high highs of The Dark Knight or Godfather or Lord of the Rings level, but it's not like that far off. You know, we just revisited War last night and we were like, holy shit, is this the best movie of the Caesar trilogy?
Yeah.
Because we've always thought it was Dawn, but now prepping these episodes and seeing what works in the text and also what has been evolved in the technical filmmaking, we're like, wow, War is a serious piece of filmmaking. It's really good.
It's great.
So I'm excited to talk about all of these movies. We usually do like big openers, so we're not going to do that today. We usually do like kind of like table setting before massive deep dives on Patreon.
Talk
exclusive
about like
movies.
The filmography of the director. But yeah, I think especially since we're going to do this whole Caesar trilogy
right.
of the Planet of the Apes franchise. Let's just like jump into each one.
The first franchise we've covered on the show. That's pretty cool.
Is it?
I think so. We did Blade Runner.
Dune. You know, it's like not necessarily a franchise completely.
But it's the first one we've covered in a row. You know, the movies in a row on Patreon.
That's
true. We've never done anything like that. We did Blade Runner in 2049 on Patreon. We did Dune 1 on Patreon, but Dune 2 on the main feed. So this is the first franchise technically that we've covered on the feed. We're also doing another one, I guess, if you want to call Linklater's Before trilogy a franchise.
I guess it is.
It sort of is, yeah. I guess, by the definition. One of the only ones. So, all right. Our Patreon episodes are deep dives. Obviously, like we said, we're going to be covering 6+ hours of the Caesar trilogy and the wider Apes universe in these discussions. This is our mini series. These episodes are live commentaries. So we will be talking about Rise of the Planet of the Apes while watching it. If you're on the main feed, you're listening to a sample of this episode. So if you go into the description or show notes of this episode, you'll find our Patreon, the Extra Credits Plus, where you can join us on Living Plus to get access to the full Rise of the Planet of the Apes episode, as well as our other 3 to 4 hour movie deep dives we publish on there. Living Plus members, which is the name of our people over at Patreon, get at least 3 new episodes every new month. And they also get exclusive voting access to future episodes. They also get monthly newsletters to keep up with our programming and what we're watching. And finally, members have access to discuss the movies we cover in the comments of our episodes and give their own extra credits to whatever film we're exploring. And we also just started a Reddit. Which I can't tell if it's a mistake or not. I can't believe those words came out of my mouth. But we've gotten a lot of requests over the past year to create a Facebook page or a Reddit page.
Like have a community space, yeah.
Yeah, where more people can talk about all of our episodes. So we created a Reddit that's going to be in the description of this episode, and it'll be in every description of all of our future episodes where we'll post all of our new episodes on there so people can start conversations about maybe what they think deserves extra credit about whatever movie we're talking about, or if they just want to be like, wow, you guys are doing such a good job. You know, thanks for doing what you're doing. 5 stars only. And for any future new listeners, we currently have a catalog of movies like Goodfellas on Patreon, Alien, Silence of the Lambs, Phantom Thread, The Social Network, Dune, Portrait of Lady on Fire, a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Zodiac.
Dude, we're so busy. Like, I
know.
I forget that we did all those episodes.
It's crazy because so much work goes into doing each one of those episodes, and then we just, like, never...
You just, like, leave it.
Yeah, yeah. You have to leave it in the past. Yeah. You can't listen to the episode. We don't really listen to our episodes unless we're editing, and I just forget sometimes we did those, you know? Like, I'll see on my feed when I'm just, like, editing the Patreon, like, what's on there. I'm like, wow, we did, like... 4 hours on Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, what do we talk about? I'm like, it must have been interesting. Like, it was a good time.
What is cool, though, like, as we, and we'll get into the movie in a second, everyone, but as we kind of go through those episodes, it is really fun to, like, revisit movies that I absolutely love, like a Goodfellas, like a Social Network or a Phantom Thread. And I thought I loved them before, but after talking about them, like, I feel like they have a new space in my mind. I think I love them even more, which is really cool.
I have a new appreciation for them.
Yeah.
And the opposite has happened with some other movies.
That's
too.
So true. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm sure listeners can guess which those are. But so for any listeners who want to listen and watch along with us, you can stream Rise of the Apes right now on Hulu. I believe all of the Apes films in the Apes universe are on Hulu right now, which is pretty sick. Or you can purchase the Caesar trilogy, which is what we suggest. Though I will say, 2 of our 4K discs do not work.
Bummer, yeah.
I've never had that happen before, so it doesn't seem to be a 4K system issue on my end. We only have the Blu-rays in those boxes that work. The 4K discs do not work. So I guess listeners, be wary of that and do research for why that is, because, I mean, maybe, it, you know, I didn't Google it. I'm sure other people have had issues as well. So
it was so sad to see it glitch. Yeah.
But it looks really good on War.
But it is
so
better
excited
to have the DVD, honestly, if you have the ads version of Hulu like us, because then it takes so long to watch.
Plus the special features.
Movie.
Like, if you're going to get a DVD or a Blu-ray to get special features, this is one of the, you know,
a
group
so
of
true
movies to do that with because of the motion capture.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's really incredible. All right. On play, we'll start the movie. 3, 2, 1, play. All right. So, The Rise of the Planet of the Apes. This movie starts off with Bright Eyes being stolen from her home.
Yeah, and like you said before, I always forget about this, and I also do think it is like a very corny opening, to be honest. Like, there's someone who's looking at the camera, you know, at one point. So
it does feel a little cheesy in moments. Yeah.
I didn't realize, though, that this was also motion capture. Like, I mean, I didn't think they were real apes in the wild, like they were filming, but
Yeah.
I just didn't realize, I guess, because I never think of this scene, that there's also motion capture throughout the whole movie anytime apparently you see an ape.
Right. So I think Weta is the, I think that's how you pronounce it, but they are the, basically the digital team who creates all the composites that we see for all the apes, and they do all the motion capture technology, and they work with other companies to build that technology too. And so what you see in the behind the scenes of this film is, yes, there are real actors performing with technology all over their bodies and their suits to give that motion capture performance. And there's a lot of post-production work done, and the technology has evolved over the decade of making these movies. So that's why they look better and better over time. But also, a lot of the apes we see in the periphery of these films are completely computer generated, which is interesting too, because it's hard sometimes to distinguish between an actor and the CGI apes until you start really looking. And when you start really looking, you're like, wow, you do really need actors on these movies, because you can kind of see in the background that some of the apes do feel like they're not quite real, you know?
Yeah.
So there are some, you know, CGI differences you can spot, but because the motion capture performances are so excellent, it really doesn't matter. You know, you kind of suspend disbelief.
Exactly.
So we're kind of seeing the first major motif of this film here, when we're seeing all these apes in their natural habitat. We have poachers chasing after them.
For Genesis, right? For the company.
Is it Genesis? Oh, yeah. It's a play on words. Yeah.
Well, it's the whole point is that it's supposed to remind you of Genesis.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess this is the motif in the sense of, like, where is Caesar's home, right? This is his original home. Obviously, we're following his mother, Bright Eyes, I think is what they call her in this film. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning of this movie here, which I always forget. And then we have Caesar's pseudo home with his father, Will, played by James Franco. So it's kind of like a quasi father figure. And then we have his future home in the sanctuary, which then again is not his real home. And then eventually in the Redwoods, he finds a home.
Caesar is home at the end. Yeah. Home. And also, I think it's interesting because we're opening up a brand new set of movies, right? And instead of having the net scenes of capturing humans from the original Planet of the Apes, we start out with like the net scenes of trying to capture the apes in the wild.
Yeah. And I guess this is kind of a little bit of a shift of the Charlton Heston character, right? Because we're flipping the Charlton Heston character from the 1968 Planet of the Apes film, who is kind of enslaved by the apes, right? In that movie.
Yeah.
And instead here we get the flip of watching Caesar, and they are, you know, parallel characters in a way. So I watched the deleted scenes on the Blu-ray of this. In a deleted scene, Bright Eyes' partner, who I assume to be Caesar's father, is shown chasing the people on the back of the truck who have captured Bright Eyes, and then they shoot the ape that's chasing them and kill the ape that's chasing them. It makes the movie, you know, have a mood that reminds you more of a Matt Reeves film. It's really intense. It's pretty cynical. And I think they cut a lot of those moments out of this film. There's a later scene in the movie where the neighbor, the iconic neighbor of this film, which we're going to laugh at a lot, the dude has had a rough few years living next to Will and Caesar and Will's dad too. There was a scene where the neighbor loses his finger, right? Caesar bites off his finger, and we'll get to that. But there's a lot of those moments that are really scary and kind of intense for what feels like a blockbuster family summer movie that they rip out of this film to instead give it that kind of fantastical and semi-serious tone.
Exactly. That's why this movie feels so much like a superhero movie, because it feels so family friendly.
Yeah.
Two, it's kind of detriment, but it also is fine because it's fun and because you're watching Caesar grow up. And again, you're like so emotionally attached to baby Caesar.
Right. Yes. So we saw an omniscient camera move in on Bright Eyes' like yellowish eyes as she's like crying in the car that's been, you know, full of poachers. Mm-hmm. And then the camera pulls out on her eyes in a lab doing puzzles for scientists. And we meet two of our leads of the film. The two major leads, I guess, we have James Franco as...
Playing James Franco.
That's just, you know, that's who he was in 2011. Will is the character. He is a chemist who is trying to discover a cure for his father's Alzheimer's disease by testing something called ALZ-112 on chimpanzees. And he's the father figure, right, to Caesar. And do you know who was in talks to be cast in this role?
No, who?
The rumor was Tobey Maguire.
Okay.
Just connecting the Spider-Man universes.
Because you, well, I mean, we'll talk about this as we go on, but ever since you said, like, this movie reminds you so much of Spider-Man, especially since Amazing Spider-Man is around this time.
It really is.
Because of the lab and James Franco of it all.
It's also the contrast, like the coloring of the movie.
Yeah, the kind of blue. Yeah, but I couldn't get out of my head, like, the idea of an Andrew Garfield playing the, like, James Franco role. Could you imagine how emotional it would be to see Andrew Garfield's crying eyes say goodbye to Caesar at the very end of this movie?
Much more affecting than what we have Franco doing here, for sure.
Yeah. Even before you, like, just said that his name was Will, I'm sure it connected at some point, but I would not have been able to tell you his name.
Like, I've had to look it up.
James Franco.
A lot. Yeah. Then the other lead actor is Will's supervisor, Gensis. I think they call him Jacobs. He's obviously played by David Oyelowo, who is an excellent stage actor, and in feature films, he's become very famous over the past decade and a half now. He's gone from having very big roles like MLK and Selma to smaller roles like the much disliked principal in Interstellar.
That
movie's not a fan of him, but we see him. It's a tough role for
that
principal.
Now that you're talking about the characters, I don't know if I could tell you anyone's name in this movie, like even the dad. Besides Caesar,
that's true. Will's dad, yeah.
And, like, I don't even know the scientist names. Like,
I mean, I might just call them by their actor names. You know, that's fine. But we do have Will as the main character, Jacobs as his boss.
I guess Jacobs does click with me because Koba ends up spelling his
Jacobs
name
later. It literally tells you. And also, I think David Oyelowo gives, like, a really animated performance.
Yeah, it feels like a superhero movie.
Yeah, he feels like he's in a different movie, but I kind of want to see more of that movie because his performance feels like it's for the last 30 minutes of this film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of energy the last 30 minutes of this film has. What Franco is doing in this movie is much more sedated. I don't need to be polite because of what we know about Franco offset, but he really seems like he's high, like he's on drugs for like half of this movie. Like, parts of this movie feels like he's wide awake, he's doing a good job, he's emoting. It's also a tough performance because for actors on mocap movies, you are acting with the motion capture performer so they can react to you and have a serious performance, and for the digital animators to work with that performance. And then they shoot it again, but without the mocap.
Right.
And then they composite the two images into one scene.
Yeah.
And so a lot of what Franco's doing in this movie is acting to nothing in the scenes that we see of him. But if you watch in the special features, he actually does better in acting because he has Andy Serkis across from him, except we never really see those.
You can't use it, yeah.
It's too expensive, and I guess that's the point. The technology will get to the point where it's not as expensive over the next few decades, but as of right now, still, it's too expensive, and the animators would have to, like, brush out Andy Serkis in his best performances, and they just can't do that for Franco in this movie. Yeah, I mean, what Franco's doing here just does not work, right? He just does not he does not seem like he understands what kind of movie he's in. I mean, for me personally, I mean, listeners, you let us know. And, you know, I like him fine in the Spider-Man films. If anything, I think he's actually pretty good as the Green Goblin son.
Yeah.
Especially in Spider-Man 1 and 3. And in 2, he kind of plays like an alcoholic. It's a little bit confusing.
I think he's like a great, snotty, rich kid.
Yeah, he's fantastic at that. But in this movie, as a scientist, as you said, it just doesn't totally ever click. I do believe him in moments as, like, the quote-unquote father to Caesar.
Yes.
That's a lot of what Andy Serkis is bringing to the table.
Yes, I totally agree. And there's, like, some, like, great lines later that I want to read that are really, really funny on rewatch, like watching James Franco go into a whole, like,
his monologues.
Yes, monologue about, like, IQ and, like, what is happening with all these millions of pictures of brain scans around him.
Right. That's a lot of that is to Frida Pinto's Caroline, which is the girlfriend figure, the veterinarian who works at the zoo,
who gets, like, nothing to do except for the god thematic.
Yeah, the god complex.
This idea of, like, you shouldn't, you know, try to control things, like, you're playing God. Like, that is all through her character. And
so we're introduced to Will and Jacob. Actually, in a scene, another scene I forget about, I guess I just forget about the beginning of this movie quite a lot when thinking back on it. Will is actually the character who rushes Jacob at the beginning of this movie, or Jacobs, sorry. So Will is kind of rushing the cartoonish villain that we'll come to meet, who is the kind of like millionaire head of Genesis, Jacobs, who is in conversation with the board about what to do with the new drug. Because at first, Jacobs is sort of reserved. And he's like unanimated about this discovery that Will feels he's made about curing Alzheimer's. And it's he's kind of like more cautious than Will, who we learn is maybe kind of rushing a little bit to save his father, which is obviously like a really kind of sympathetic theme of his character. And Will is like, you know, the 112 works. I just did it on one primate. Like one is all we need. We have full cognitive recovery. We're ready. And Jacobs is like, I think we're rushing this.
Right.
And that's really surprising to watch this movie again, because at the end of the film, Jacobs turns into the kind of megalomaniac, you know, hyper-capitalist, greedy villain character. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning of this movie, he's kind of like laid back in his chair. Yeah. He's chilling. And meanwhile, like a Franco shift. Looks coked up. You know, it's completely different tone.
It does feel like a writing shift to kind of really push the plot along of like, no, we have to do this, actually, even when James Franco, you know, quits it because his father, you know, doesn't survive it.
Right.
And that's James Franco's motivation. But yeah, I actually think like rewatching this, there is an interesting dynamic set up at the very beginning that I've always really kind of missed, because I haven't really thought about the human dynamic as much as I do in the later films of the Caesar trilogy, where they make it really clear of like the humans being exploitative. And this one, it's a little bit more confusing because James Franco is like a father figure to Caesar. But I do think there's this dynamic set up at the very beginning where we get like one human, Franklin, who is the like who's another scientist working in the lab.
Yeah, he's like a chemist who works with Will.
Yeah, right. And he also I know him from like Tucker and Dale. Trey, I don't think you've seen that.
I have not seen that, but I know the movie. Yeah,
yeah, like they cut off his bowling fingers. Some of the most iconic lines in cinema. but shout out to my people out there who get that
Tucker Dale people.
Yeah, but he like actually does a really good job in an emotional performance here. And he is the person who like tells Jacobs when Jacobs is like, we have to like put all the, you know, the apes like down. Uh-huh. He's like, these are beings with, you know, feelings, like you can't just like kill them.
Right.
And James Franco's character is, you think, like connected to the apes,
like an animal rights activist Caesar. Or something.
Yeah.
Right.
But really we see, like, especially when the Bright Eyes, like Caesar's mom, comes crashing through the like meeting sequence.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because you see James Franco like upset that the security guard shoots her because it's like the hope for his father. And then Jacobs, when they, you know, do an insert shot of his face, he sees like the loss of like money.
Right. Exactly.
And so like it's trying to set up these different ways of how humans are looking at the apes, like how they're using them.
Right. Exactly. And they show the dead body of Bright Eyes and they kind of do the camera pan out from Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
And you see the zoom out too from the camera overhead. And you could say that there's some like kind of like anti-capitalist imagery with this dead animal at the cost of creating some kind of cure that is really just being used to up a share price and maybe actually, or like the stock price, and not actually care about people who have Alzheimer's. Like, I don't really think that's exactly what's happening in this movie. It's more about what you said at the top, which maybe listeners are confused about, but we'll get into it more later, about this idea of characters trying to play God in this movie, which is, you know, you have Will trying to play God with his father and beat, you know, fate, essentially. Like, that's the idea. And then you have that with Jacobs later in the film when he learns that the ALZ-113, which is like the next drug after the original one Will made, can actually make people more intelligent, possibly. And then you have that also with Caesar, who is unwilling to see his like fellow ape enslaved anymore in these zoos or these sanctuaries.
And, let's just say also at the top of the pod, two things. One, like the theme of playing God is just silly, to be honest. When you're playing it from an idea of like, don't try to be God, because ultimately there is like a
there's a predetermined fate. Yeah.
That is different than saying like if there were a movie that was addressing like don't try to control things because someone is trying to like monopolize power, that's very different.
Take your stinking paw off me, you damn 38.
Hi.
Hello there. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah. Thank you for listening so far. And hopefully you are enjoying the episode so far. I feel like maybe if you made it this far.
They got it this far. They're having a good time.
I mean, let's hope. But to access our full conversation, you can go to the description of this episode to join our Patreon community, the Extra Credits Plus.
Yes. And for only $5 a month, you can get access to our full catalog of Patreon exclusive episodes. Hope to see you there.